Before the episode begins, we'd like to tell you about Impulse, meeting health pioneers. Impulse is the podcast where you will discover the latest advances in the medical field through conversations with the brightest minds changing how care is delivered. From the rehabilitation of paraplegics having lost the ability to walk, to revolutionary contraception methods for men, the podcast covers current and future wonders of medicine that are or will be transforming healthcare. Your host, Mathieu Chaffard, eagerly awaits you, so don't hesitate and go listen to fascinating episodes about medical advancements. You are listening to Science for Care. I am Anka Petre, and this show unveils the stories behind some of the most important scientific and medical breakthroughs of our time. How reading the genome gave hope to 300 million patients. Rare diseases. The only thing really rare about them is their name. While it is true that individually each rare disease only affects a handful of people, together they represent 300 million individuals worldwide. That is 4% of the human population. These 300 million people suffer from over 7,000 different diseases that are catalogued under the generic name rare diseases, simply because they have a common feature. They affect fewer than 5 in 10,000 people. But that is not the only thing this disease has in common. Most of them are genetic, appear during childhood, and are incredibly challenging to diagnose. Did you know that it takes an average of 7 to 8 years before a diagnosis is reached? During this time, a patient's condition can significantly deteriorate. To better understand this fascinating field, we have the pleasure of welcoming on this podcast Professor Stanislas Lyonnais, the director of Imagine, the Paris-based Institute of Genetic Diseases. He is also a renowned professor of genetics and a clinical geneticist.
There are several facts that are combined to make the diagnostic of rare and in particular rare genetic disorders very difficult. First of all, there are so many diseases. We estimate 8,000 of them, most of them being not identified as far as the molecular basis, and therefore the genetic testing are known. Second, many of these disorders share the feature of a very highly variable expression between affected individuals, even in the same family, and also variable expression with age. So it means that at different ages of life, the diagnostic could be very different, and the focus and the viewpoint of the clinician could be really cheated by the expression of the disease. A third characteristic is the fact that the health system is not fully aware of the fact that it could happen that a child, a family, an individual is affected with a rare genetic disease and therefore is not prepared to think about it.
Not knowing was the worst thing, recalls Lawrence, whose 5-year-old daughter fought an unidentified enemy for years before doctors reached a diagnosis. This fight alienated Lawrence from the rest of her family, as pediatricians started questioning her psychological state and doubting her motherly instincts. Many families go through this exhausting fight against an invisible enemy until the day someone finally manages to shed light on it, giving it a name and making it real. With each diagnosis, a new door opens, filled with solutions rather than burdens, with hope rather than despair. That moment, a doctor calls to say, "We know what it is," feels like an absolute liberation.
One feature that is shared by rare genetic diseases are severity, long-time evolution and often heredity. So what the patients might expect from a diagnosis is first to stop wondering, to stop the deadlock, the impasse of not knowing who is the enemy. And it's, in a fight, you have to know the enemy. So you know the symptoms. A child is epileptic, a child has a kidney failure, heart disease, a malformation, intellectual disability, and so on and so forth. But you don't know why. And this is what we call the diagnostic in genetics, is the why question, first of all. So you name the disease. And it's really a first and open view to what is the reason, and also it kills the wrong idea that it could be related to the mother, to the pregnancy, to the childbirth. It kills the idea, the wrong idea that everyone amongst us could use when you don't have the real cause, namely the pregnancy, the mother, the food, the occupation of the parents, the childbirth, and so on and so forth. So that's the first important thing. The second is that it will relate a child, a family, an individual with others. You are not alone anymore. You are a part even of a small group, a cohort, well phenotype, well genotype of patients that could be recruited by any clinical trial, any assay, any study, even low-level study of natural history of disease. What is the disease? What is its evolution? I think you are regrouped. And this is also the field for parent support groups, associations, that could help people to live with. And that's a very important asset, to be regrouped with others, even if the others are two or three in France. That's the second point. The third point is that the opening of a diagnostic by the key of a gene and a mutation of the gene is, of course, the open door to the pathophysiology, which is the complex name of why does it not work? And if you raise that question, of course, you raise the question of treatment. How could we repair? And finally, and not the least, the question of genetic counseling. Many of these rare diseases, if not a majority, we think 75%, are genetic in origin, and amongst them, vast proportion have followed hereditary patterns of Mendelian or non-Mendelian disorders, which means that the genetic counseling issues are raised by the family as far as they could question the fact, can I have another child affected? What is the risk for my brothers? What is the risk for my other children? Will this child have a risk on its own when he's become to adulthood, and so on and so forth? So these four questions, naming, regrouping, understanding and treating, and counseling, are the four issues raised by a fair diagnostic in rare diseases.
Most rare diseases have a genetic cause. Therefore, one of the keys to diagnosing them is to find the triggering gene. Today, this may seem an easy task. After all, we can all have our DNA sequenced through a simple mouth swab. But it hasn't always been the case. After Watson, Crick, and Franklin discovered the structure of DNA in 1953, many attempts were made to sequence DNA. But it wasn't until 2001 that the first draft of the human genome was published. This opened the door for scientists all over the world to study the link between rare diseases and mutations found in a person's genome. The idea is that once these mutations are identified, we can try to repair them. Yes, you heard that right. We can take out our toolbox and start repairing damaged or mutated parts of our DNA. As incredible as this may sound, this is what gene therapy is based on. Gene therapy is a medical approach that treats or prevents diseases by correcting the underlying genetic problem. Using this method, doctors are able to introduce a new gene into a cell to help fight a disease, fix a malfunctioning gene, or even remove parts of it. Imagine just how life-changing this therapy can be for patients suffering from genetic diseases.
We cannot address 8,000 disorders, of course, so we have regrouped our strength in programs where we can have the three lines of support and actions that are necessary to tackle some of the groups of disorders, namely neurodevelopmental anomalies, kidney disorders, immunity anomalies, hematological diseases, inborn errors of development, malformation, congenital malformation, and also a strong program on data science, merging clinical phenotype data with research and genomics data. I think the most prominent hope as far as gene therapy or gene-derived therapies are obviously in the immunology and hematology programs. This is the place, imagine, where the first atoms for gene therapy have been made in human in the year 2000 in immune deficiency and now reaching very frequent genetic hematological genetic disorders such as beta thalassemia or sickle cell disease. Now, what is interesting is that that endeavor has attracted other domains to dare to attempt, and it's also true now in neurology, metabolic disorders, kidney disorders, that we have movements to say, well, we also want to use gene therapy or gene derived therapy. So that's one of the very strong assets of the Institute. So we have to use all means. The gain of function of a gene can be regulated by antibodies, by downregulating the gene and not by adding a new gene. We can repurpose drugs that have been left over by the pharmas to use for instance in epilepsy with high level screening programs to say we will trust blindly not one drug but thousands of drugs just to find a hit. So no dogma, no ideology. Yes, gene therapy is one of the leading programs, but not the single one.
Finding solutions for rare disease patients has become a global fight. In December 2021, Europe's member states adopted the first UN resolution on addressing the challenge of persons with rare diseases and their families. This commitment shed light on the 30 million European citizens that suffer from rare diseases. The ultimate goal is to establish recommendations for changes to European legislation on rare diseases and build a common roadmap for all member states. This could have several consequences. First, it would open the door to cross-border scientific collaborations to study these illnesses and develop new treatments. Now, before moving forward, a few words on why data sharing is so critical for research on rare diseases. As discussed at the beginning of this episode, there are very few people suffering from each one of the rare diseases. Therefore, it is very complicated for scientists to study these conditions when they only have data from 10 or 20 patients. However, if scientists across Europe have a framework to share their data with one another, the pool of patients increases dramatically. The more patients there are, the higher the chances of finding a treatment. Now, back to our list of consequences. Second, it could help patients find expertise and care in other member states, breaking their isolation and providing them with renewed hope. Patient associations and advocacy groups have a very important role to play. Last but not least, it could aid in the development of new ways to evaluate and commercialize treatments based on their unique characteristics. For patients who are already racing against the clock, a drug approval delay means months or even years wasted.
I would name three challenges amongst many. First of all, diagnostic is still an issue. We estimate that one child on two child, 50% of children getting out of the Imagine clinics do not have yet a diagnostic on their file, a name on their file. So it's still a great challenge, and therefore we have diagnostic programs based on whole genome sequencing in parents and children, and also for the children who have not been explained by genome sequencing, there is no glass ceiling, and we think that we have to use the multiple gene models or epigenetic approaches or defects of gene expression and not of gene sequences, and so on and so forth. So diagnostic is still a great issue to open the four doors I mentioned initially. Second, treatment. It's even a broader challenge, as only 10% of those children have a specific treatment. Of course, there is the whole medicine and care to help them, but the question of specificity is to address the gene or even the mutation of the gene that is responsible for the disease. And therefore, we have huge progresses to make, and also to be accompanied and combined with industry. And the third issue is very important, is, I think, to help these families, these kids, these parents, these individuals affected to live with. I think in the time between the diagnostic, and the deadlock and the diagnostic, and in the time between the diagnostic and the treatment, they have to live. They have to get used to the disease, to fight it, and we have to help them also with programs of human and social sciences to make them acquainted, to make them visible, to make them encounter and regroup in support association groups, etc. So I think these three challenges to name, to treat, and to make even the lay people aware of that questions are the three great programs of Imagine.
The history of medicine and science is marked by discoveries that changed the lives of millions. The day we successfully sequenced, mapped, and published the entire human genome, we opened the door to new unforeseen breakthroughs. That day, we gave hope to the millions of people suffering from rare genetic diseases. Ever since that day, scientists all over the world have been trying to understand the link between a gene and a disease, with the hope that one day they will be able to cure it. Each new discovery, each new diagnosis technique, each new treatment, each new policy and regulation represents hope for patients and their families. We must continue to invest in research, promote cross-border collaboration, and accelerate drug approvals, for it is not 1, 100, or even 10,000 people that are waiting. It is 300 million. Science for Care is a podcast by Health Tech for Care, a non-profit organization designed to support and promote access to care for all. If you enjoy our show, please mention it to your friends, family, and co-workers, and leave ratings and reviews on your favorite listening platform.